From Brighton and Hove Museums, this is Tell Me About the Chamber Pots, a five-part podcast series about a year of innovative experiments in digital storytelling across our museum spaces.
Hello, I'm Charlotte Petz, and I've worked alongside Brighton and Hove Museums on various different projects over the past few years, including producing podcasts and looking at new ways to tell stories. Over the past 18 months, led by former head of digital Kevin Bacon, yeah, not that one, Brighton and Hove Museums has run several live experiments in different kinds of community and digital storytelling. We've worked with tech companies, academics, and most importantly, volunteers from across our Brighton and Hove communities. We've unpacked the different ways people interact with exhibits, and we've experimented with new cutting-edge tools and methods for telling stories to better help bring the museum to life.
Episode 1, crowdsourcing a Preston Manor tour guide.
Through the hazy days of summer 2022, a dedicated group of volunteers took part in creative workshops, resulting in them writing an entirely new audio tour guide for Preston Manor. The results were fascinating, sometimes fiery, and funny. It was an inspiring, fresh, outsourced approach to uncovering social history. In this episode, Kevin Bacon, not that one, speaks to the volunteer group who gave their time to the project.
I'm Kevin Bacon, I'm head of digital for Brighton Hove Museums.
My name's Liam Spinach.
I am Leslie Morrill.
My name is Sarah Johnson.
My name is Mark Benson.
And I'm Andrew Bradstreet.
Well, first off, thank you all for coming out in the cold, and I feel this is like another incident where I'm trying to meet your seasoned mic pros, so if you start having nightmares later on with a mic in front of you every time you're speaking, I'm entirely to blame for that. I want to sort of kick off by reflecting on the Preston Manor project, and I think for me a good place to start, which I think might be one of those things we discussed at the very first session back when June, July, certainly when it was a lot warmer. Which is about motivations. So what was it that appealed about the project to you when you first heard about it or saw the advert?
For me, it was because I work in a historical building at school and I've done a similar thing, and it was something that appealed to me, but it was someone who knows me and said, this is right up your street. So I thought, yeah, go for it.
I'm similar in it's such an exciting opportunity, what you were offering there. I've got a historical recreator's hat on, and what I like about any buildings that we look at is that as great as they are, they're never peopled. It's the people that's always missing, and I saw that as an opportunity to actually see, well, can I actually do that with an audio guide? I do it physically, but can we do it audially?
I love history per se, and I'm constantly telling people little factoids about the city, like a little tour guide. But Preston Manor was somewhere that I didn't know very much about at all. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is a great opportunity to find out more local history and have more factoids to tell people when I'm showing them about the place. I just love being able to place, oh, did you know that there used to be a Roman settlement down near the bottom of Preston Park? And people go, oh, no, really? Oh, that's how. And suddenly they take much more interest in their community, in their local area, and think, oh, it's not just a place that I pass through every day.
The great thing about Brighton is the more you scratch it historically, the more you always uncover.
Yes.
You know, and again, you know, I thought I knew Preston Manor. There's whole things I hadn't expected to find, and it's always very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Finding out the new tales to tell was really a very strong motivator for me.
Yeah, definitely. It's like a Pandora's box, really, the manor. We all did different stories, didn't we? We all had different ideas about where we wanted to go with our stories and stuff. And for me personally, I'm a bit of a history nerd and wanting to be part of a practical project and not just kind of, you know, online doing my research or reading a book and actually creating something for the public was an opportunity I couldn't really turn down, really. I think it's been a fantastic project to be part of.
It was being in that space that was really interesting, because it's not quite a museum the way it's been preserved and left as a legacy. That made the big difference in terms of how we got involved and the sort of stories that we told while we were there.
Absolutely.
I think at least three of you are committed storytellers in one form or another, I would say, in terms of your kind of profession or, you know, very strong hobby, etc. I suppose maybe kind of Mark Leslie, is storytelling, would you say, something you're quite interested in?
For me, it was to delve into the building, the background, because I love visiting country homes, both here in the UK and abroad. I'm interested in what makes a house tick, which was why I chose Below Stairs, because I think below stairs are the heart of the house, but they only exist because of the people who live upstairs and own the house. I don't actually do storytelling, but I have to say the session with Craig where we did creative writing really, really inspired me and made me want to go back to college and do creative writing. I have to say I haven't done it, but it was desperately inspiring. And I do have to do a lot of writing for projects that I'm involved with behind the scenes. I'm a chair for a charity, so I have to do an annual report.
Yeah, I don't think I considered storytelling prior to this, really. I've always kind of looked at things objectively and kind of like read things from different people's perspective and that kind of thing. But to kind of get my own voice across and actually seeing things through my eyes and then wanting, you know, the general public to kind of see it, potentially the way I, you know, did my, you know, story about the staircase. You know, I don't think I would have considered it prior to this opportunity, really. And I think that's kind of, you know, started my journey now in storytelling and kind of really interested as well into potentially creative writing and kind of being more expressive in that kind of form, which I don't think I would have necessarily had prior to this, really.
Is it partly because you thought of it that you should stay objective, you should stay just factual, etc., if you were writing about historical things?
I don't even think that, really. I just don't think I necessarily... Well, I don't know, really. Like, it's... I presumed I could write, I guess, is probably the basic thing. I thought, it's not for me or whatever, but actually...
It is for everyone.
It's for everyone, exactly that. And, like, if you've got an idea and you should just definitely run with it and see where you go, really, you shouldn't say no to things. I think this kind of part of this project has allowed me to think, yes, I can do this, I can do that. You know, it's really kind of allowed me to kind of open different horizons and opportunities which I never really probably considered before. So
yeah,
it was established very quickly, a very safe environment. I mean, I know, again, as you say, some of us have had experience of doing that, but the support that we had was so good that you could take a different avenue if you wanted to.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think definitely that writing session kind of like, actually, Mark, you can do this. If you put yourself out there and you want to give it a go, you should definitely give it a go.
Without that structure, I don't think we would have done what we did in the time that we managed it.
Yeah.
I struggle every day just to get in front of the computer and get things written down. But knowing I'm going somewhere and I'm doing this as part of a project with other people, that was really important. Just to have that structure of, you know, without a deadline, I'm nothing, really.
Yeah. Deadlines are very useful in that, yeah, you have to get X done. And whether you're someone who prepares way in advance, not me, or right at the last minute, it really gives structure and shape. And I think Craig's layout and structure really just empowered us to do that. And as Liam said, it was actually a very short process. And the contact time that we had with you was quite limited in a way. And certainly I did a whole bunch of research with Liam that informed, you know, my writing outside of the sessions. So, having the structure allowed us confidence that we would get to the end, you know, that we were being helped along, that there was a safety net, that we weren't going to be allowed to fail. And that was actually a thing that was quite strong throughout the whole process. I felt that we were really held and people were very giving of this, of their knowledge and stories, the people who work in the house. without which many of the stories that we pulled together would probably not exist.
Having access to all the resources that you've got, you know, these letters that have been sitting there for years and no one's looked at, and then you get the it's very exciting. And when you're saying researching, Paula in particular was super. Once I started getting a clearer idea of where I wanted to go, and being able to actually turn to an expert and go, hey, do you know about this? Have you got the, am I going, could you find anything about this? Because I really want a real person rather than a fictitious, and finding all those wonderful resources and reading, finding things that you can discover and getting a sense of them. Because again, it's that mixture between creativity and historical fact. So like I was writing about the butler and the lady's maid, and I had that thing about, do I create a character or do I, what I would normally do, just stick with the facts? But having that bedrock of support behind and going, what do you think of here or what of that, was really helpful.
It would have been easy for us to say, oh, give us some more time. If we'd have had that much more time, we'd all still be sitting in that room.
It's true.
Putting those kind of limits on things gives you a deadline in words as well as length that was really important. I think piece started off about five times as long before I edited it down. And that's a skill I need in my daily life, so that was really helpful.
No, it's fascinating doing the editing process. Unless you are at college or university or something like that, it's a long time since anyone looked at my writing and actually went, oh, you know, have you thought about putting it this way? And sometimes, as always with those things, you agreed with it. Other times went, no, I like it how it is. But it was really wonderful to have that experience of that. I think the other aspect that I thought was actually making me really think about audio and in a new way, because I'm physically talking to people when I do any of my recreating, but the fact that actually I'm just going to be in someone's ears and about, you know, what could I do, what couldn't I do, you know, and it was fascinating and in one sense to solve it, because I was talking to a lady's maid, I suddenly realised I couldn't do it. I have to get my friend in, and because she was from Switzerland, I had to get someone who was German speaking, so I had an accent, you know. It's all of those little bits, those repercussions that I wasn't expecting at first to make it sound realistic as best as it possibly could be.
Yeah, give it texture and interest, but also weighted in some form of reality.
The way I explained it to a friend was that, you know, I am the voice of that room now. It's a little bit intimidating. It's strangely powerful. My ears might be burning now forever.
Yeah.
And that's what made it really worthwhile. Yeah.
And it was quite exciting to the big opening for us, and to actually go round and hear the different voices. Obviously, we knew each other, started to get used to our personalities and what we were like, but to actually hear what aspect everyone went on. I think, Mark, you went on we did the dog painting.
Yeah, the dog paintings, yeah.
I just love that one, because I've walked down that staircase quite a few times being Brighton born and bred. I've been in Preston Manor, I've seen all of that lot. And I loved the fact that you made me just focus on one picture that I kind of looked, I've acknowledged, but just that kind
Never
of thing,
absorbed.
I thought, that marks this audio guide out differently to, if you look here, you'll see all the pictures here and all of this lot, and this one was here, and there's a story behind it, and this one's interesting. The way that you actually described it and made me look at it afresh. And I thought that was, you know, very successful. Thank you.
There's a lot of things I did not know about Preston Manor that I think are really interesting about the history of the town. I didn't know that my house was part of the estate. I didn't know that Western Road wasn't because it ran west out of town, but was named after the Western family. There's lots of things that I've been assuming about my environment that I've had to reconsider. And anytime you can get someone to stop and think and look around them, I think that's fantastic.
I feel that my stories and my research would have benefited from some additional time, but that was because I was ill, and right. So I lost time, sort of at the key research part of the process.
I think definitely if we were to run this project again or something very similar, I would think again about the research aspect of it, because to be perfectly honest, we didn't really factor it that much into the planning, because I think sort of Craig and I were sort of focused so much on the storytelling.
Yeah.
And I think both of us, and this is possibly me being a lapsed curator where I tend to drop the things that are really obvious, is I was always just thinking, well, for a, you know, 1.5 minute audio guide piece, you can actually write a story without knowing anything about what's there. You can do a lot just by describing what's around you and pure speculation. And of course, you know, many of you quite rightly actually want to do the research. So I think definitely for this sort of project again, and actually we have done something similar with the One Minute Wonders project, actually, where again my colleague Lucy, as a curator, has been there to follow up on the questions about the works people are writing about there. But that's definitely something I would factor in there, actually, and think about how we resource and facilitate that. You know, the sense I get is that it sort of largely worked for this project, and that was mainly thanks to Paula, but definitely I think in the planning and design of this sort of work, I would put that in again.
I had three to four solid days of research. And that was jumping down a lot of rabbit holes along the way, and including, you know, part of the time going up to London and back. And I had to stop myself because I knew how much, you know, so I don't need more for this. I still have notes where I'm going to go back to Hove Library, back to Keep, and look up some of the peripheral stories I was interested in.
That's the thing that floats our boat, isn't it?
Yeah.
So again, that's the bits that we...
It's the type of people we are.
Boat floating, I'm always quite interested, and I don't think we ever sort of even discussed this in the past, actually, why you chose the rooms you did. So particularly you, Mark, I mean, obviously writing about the staircase is quite an unusual one because stairs are transitional spaces. We don't normally reflect upon them. So was there a reason you chose it, or did we tell you and I've forgotten?
That was it. So I missed a couple of the sessions due to I went to a couple of weddings and that kind of stuff. So I came into the project late. I think it came into like session three, I think. And it was a staircase in the boot room, and one other room I think was available. And yeah, the staircase out of the three was just like, I had a look, I was like, yeah, this is really, really interesting actually. Like, and you touched upon like the paintings and everything, which has got a lot of personality. And I just kind of ran with it, and I thought, actually, and then, you know, we spoke about during the writing session, actually, as you mentioned, that like, it's a transitional, you know, space, and actually, like, it's more than just the objects on the walls. It's, you know, the gateway to this, you know, upstairs, and like would have been used like throughout the whole day up and down and stuff. So, you know, really had a lot to kind of talk about, and there was lots of things for people to kind of focus on, not just being a physical thing, but actually, as I wrote about, like, you know, the family's life was on the walls, really. I liked that
analogy that you gave of her being like an influencer, and that transitional space was one of the many places in which she kind of showed her crust, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was just by accident, really, that I thought, actually, it just kind of came together, really. Yeah, and I definitely felt, like, really welcomed, and everyone's lovely, and kind of, like, you know, gave me that kind of, you know, direction, actually, like, this is what we're doing and all that kind of stuff. Because I was a bit apprehensive at the beginning, thought, oh, God, like, I'm two sessions down. How am I going to be any good at writing stuff? I've never done this before. But actually, kind of came together and actually pushing myself and thinking, all right, cool, no, I can do this. Let's crack on and do it. We were kind of like, you know, really came together.
I wonder again, there might be something in the future if it was run again. None of us actually had that moment to go, I'm finding this really hard, or I'm finding this really easy, or could anyone help on that? And I just wonder whether, you know, like a WhatsApp group would have done, you know, so we could actually just go, oh, hello, welcome, I'm going this, or I'm going up to London and this,
anyone,
you know, it's that kind of thing that might have made us, it would have been quite good to just have that camaraderie and just a platform if we wanted it. It was great, me seeing and talking to each other, but what I suppose we didn't do, the elephant in the room, was that we didn't actually talk about our work apart from to Craig.
Yeah.
Or to Kevin, and that was usually by email or such, because obviously it was unfortunate he was ill, but it would have been quite nice just to us all, you know, I don't know, there was one bit I was excited about, not knowing what everyone else had and done, but at the same time, it might have been nice not having to read anyone's, but if anyone wanted to, I don't know.
I think it's extraordinary, and that has been picked up by so many of my colleagues as well, you know, that there was really a lovely... a lovely sense of enthusiasm, and I think certainly front of house staff got really buzzed up by that, because you know, they often do feel that the manor's neglected for some of the reasons we discussed earlier. And I just know many of them just really liked the fact they saw something happening, just lots of people coming for several weeks and actually just, you know, moving around the house, actually kind of really using the space, and it definitely had a positive impact.
As a convener and organiser, Kevin, do you think that sessions were long enough? I've got a lot of free time, but I could have spent all day there.
Yeah.
And I think there's an aspect, well, we've given up. I think it was sort of between 2 and 3 hours on a Saturday. And there's a kind of a kickover point where you said, well, on Saturday I'm doing this. And it wouldn't have mattered if it was 10 to 1 or 10 to
3.
4.
Yeah. Being in a space is helpful, but if you're only there for a limited time, then, you know, sometimes just walking through the space and then going, ah, was that thing left, or oh, go back and look, and then you're looking with new eyes, and or you're coming in through a different door, or that can make a real difference. You know,
I find that funny you say it, because I just stayed.
Yeah.
I just tried the bed out. Yeah. You know, they didn't seem to mind. You know, so at the end of that session, when I realised which rooms I was going to do, I felt very comfortable. Yeah. I didn't feel that pressure, or you can't be here or whatever. So I just went up there and just, yeah, started doing all that kind of thing and started thinking.
I mean, it's obvious now you say it.
It's like, I didn't even think about it. I just went there afterwards, yeah, and no one said, you've got to get out now.
One of the things I would like to have done, which I could have done, but obviously didn't think about it, I would just like to have spent more time just lurking downstairs, just to absorb what it felt like to be down there for longer periods, rather than transitioning through the kitchen and the servants' hall in order to go on to look at something else and go somewhere else.
Yeah, also, that's... maybe talk, you know, getting to know the staff a little bit. Oh, Peggy knows all. Peggy doesn't exist, but, you know, oh, Peggy knows a lot about that. She was really fascinated about that, blah, 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 blah. And you'd find that you'd start making these connections. Oh, Peggy's in next week. Do make sure you come in and speak to her. Then you've just tapped into a resource that is absolutely there, but is unknown until you stumble over it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
The permission side of it is really interesting, because we were really keen on making people feel comfortable in the house and you could take some sense of ownership of it. But I actually think we didn't do quite enough, and I think it's one of those things you forget as a museum professional, that sometimes you need to go above and beyond and actually be quite explicit in your permissions. You know, don't just rely on people feeling comfortable, just sometimes to say, yes, if you want to have a look around the house afterwards, you know, be our guest, go, you know, come back later on if you like. I think that's definitely a learning there.
Because yeah, it should have been obvious. I feel like such a fool, but it wasn't, because I'm used to trying to be being very well behaved in a museum space. You know, it's like, don't touch the things, don't, and then you figure, actually no.
So I wanted to probably move towards wrapping up, actually, sort of just discuss the kind of legacy that this project might have for you. So actually, sort of, Leslie, you were saying at the beginning you sort of came into the project because you'd done something similar at the school. Is it Rodin?
It's Rodin, yes.
Yeah. And so I get the sense you've worked on this project. Is this something you might come back to, you think, in your career or other?
I'd certainly love to do it again, whether it's Rodin, whether it's Preston Manor, whether it's somewhere else. But yes, for me, it is the people that live there. So within the archive at school, I was interviewing people who, if you like, ran the place. And that's where I got to interview the tweeny maid.
Can I ask what a tweeny maid is?
A tweeny maid is a maid who, in the mornings, she's cleaning out the fire grates and doing that sort of thing. And then come lunchtime, she puts on her posh uniform and she serves afternoon tea. So she's like the parlour maid.
Oh, okay.
So she works between floors. So she's a tweeny maid.
Yeah, yeah.
And that made me want to look at, you know, the staff that would have been running Preston Manor. But certainly, I would like to do it again, professionally and non-professionally, volunteering, because obviously when I did it for work, that was within my work capacity, whereas here, you know, it was a volunteer.
That's really interesting, Leslie. In fact, something you said there just reminded me of one of the kind of big problems you often have in professional museum practice, which is that curators aren't often instinctively very good about thinking about the lived experience of objects and spaces.
Mm.
So as you were saying, you know, your response to thinking about the servant story was you would like to spend more time in those spaces and just to imaginatively connect with what it would have been like to kind of work in what most of us would see now as being these quite austere, you know, fairly uncomfortable spaces. And it reminds me of a very different project I just heard about that. I think it was a museum in Leicester where they had a collection of material of a coal mining machinery, and they were on a project where the curator wanted to find out more about the machinery to improve their documentation, and they brought in some former miners to have a look at this. And what they got back from them was not just technically identifying, oh, this is a blah blah blah, but they'd say, oh yeah, this is this piece, but nobody used it. The coal board insisted you did, but it was actually rubbish. If you wanted to kind of break into that piece of coal, you use this.
Yep.
And that story has always stuck in my mind as being a great example about how, as a professional curator, you don't tend to think in that way of really, you know, prioritising whether it's a historic house or an object and thinking about, well, how was this really used in practice? You often get into a kind of quite sort of slightly abstracted, sort of more kind of cataloguing mode of thinking or sort of historical contextualisation. So it's really fascinating, actually, that your kind of instinctive approach to that story is, you know, not very curatorial, but absolutely valid and very pertinent to me.
I think because more and more different learning styles are being accepted, that experiential learning is quite the instinctual for some people. And it's fantastic that is being accommodated, where in the past it has just been the look, don't touch, don't, you know, be neat, tidy, and don't interrupt. But by actually being in the space, you're starting to find the relationships between the objects in that room. Then you'll notice something unusual and start exploring that, which then brings up the people that were in there, which then it kind of, you just keep expanding further and further and further with the stories as you spend more time in a space. For example, in the dining room, there's a candlestick that has one arm that's kind of wonky, and I didn't have time to find if anybody in the house knew anything about, did it get dropped? Was it, you know...
Secret door.
You know, was it a secret
door?
Yeah,
if you moved it, yeah, you missed that one.
It would have been lovely if there'd been a slightly longer audio time. I could have put that in as a, I wonder if this is, you know, because it then inspires the listeners to start looking at all the objects in the room in a different way, as accessible, as real lived objects, rather than just this pretty thing that I'm looking at right now.
I'm really happy that I've been able to do that and that I've been able to be involved. And I think that comes out in the story that I've put into the McCoy room about the legacy of what the McCoy family left and about what we leave behind as people, not just what I've left behind in the house. I'd love to go into another house, another museum, and pick up a similar audio tour from different disparate voices and what their interpretations and stories were.
Yeah.
I'm really pleased that I did what I wanted to do, that now, that when people go in there, if they're actually using it, they will realise there's this guy called Benjamin who actually worked in there and what he did, and he lived, sometimes he went home to his wife that was over the road, sometimes he did, and it peoples it a little bit. Or Emily, you know, stunning story about this Swiss person, and you know, it may make people just take a moment to think, rather than just see, oh, this is the room the maid was in, well, that seems okay, and I move out. It might just take just a moment to actually go, hey, this was a real person, and look what all she had to do all the time.
For me, I wanted to try and get people to imagine what it would have been like working in the kitchen. So for me, I wanted to try and inspire whoever listens to it to feel the heat of the kitchen, to smell what was cooking and what was happening. Because in many ways, there isn't the grandeur downstairs that other people might be explaining above stairs. But I wanted them to actually think, what would it be like to actually be in this space? And I did say to my sister, who she came with me and she's losing her sight, and I said to her, listening to all these other guys, and I'm, oh dear, I think I perhaps haven't done a good enough job, and I started to doubt what I'd done. But she was like the fresh eyes or ears in this case, and she said, no, it was good, you know, everyone's was good, but you know, I did start to wonder if I hadn't put enough depth or feeling or something. So that's the only thing I would say, which I think is why I would like to have spent more time in that environment, because then maybe I might have caught something else in it. I don't know.
It did feel really
vivid, I think. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Because you brought in the other senses as well. Obviously, yeah. You can see the room and you're listening to something, yeah. But to bring in the smell of the room, yeah. As well, and how hot it was, the feel of the place, yeah.
We're all passionate about storytelling and history and being kind of local people. We've done this for the local people, and we're trying to make a bit of a legacy and kind of do something a bit different. It's not just kind of like a, you know, the traditional BBC voice. We've kind of done our own little touch and kind of make a connection with the listener, I would imagine, like not just kind of being daunted by the house and like looking at this grand place and like, oh, it's a bit boring, isn't it? Like, you know, that kind of thing. But actually we've kind of tried to make it personal and kind of, you know, give it a new life, really. And I think, you know, we've all done a fantastic job of that, and definitely kind of created new levels of nerdiness within me to kind of spur me on to do new and bigger things in the field, really. So yeah, it's been absolutely fantastic.
Does anyone feel this project might have changed the way they perceive museums? And I don't necessarily mean our museums in our portfolio in Brighton Hove Museums, but just any museum or historic house you go to in the future. Do you think you might see it a little bit differently, having worked on this project?
I might want different things from them. I will probably be asking, where are the people? What is the journey of the people through this? And how did its use change?
I think I'll be paying more attention to objects on a shelf and the context that they were originally in.
Yeah. Is that its original context, yeah. Or has it just been popped there?
Thank you all for your time and your honesty in that discussion. That was really interesting. And, okay, no idea what's going to be in the podcast yet, but there's a lot of material there I think you can use.
Thank you so much for listening. We're very grateful to our volunteers for donating their time to this podcast, as well as their huge contributions to the project as a whole. Join us next time on Tell Me About the Chamber Pots, when we take the labels away and everything falls apart. Episode 2 tells the story of the innovative 1 minute app, which both delighted and annoyed people when we tried it out at the museum.
Tell Me About the Chamber Pots is a Brighton and Hove Museums production. It was written, presented and edited by Charlotte Petts and me, Chris Thorpe Tracy. The main interviewer was Kevin Bacon. Not that one. This series is produced by Nick Kay and Kevin Bacon. Not that one. For Brighton and Hove Museums. Find us online at brightonmuseums.org.uk. That's brightonmuseums.org.uk.